Well, hello and welcome to Sferio, the local voice of our hemisphere, here on WMBR Cambridge 88.1 FM. I'm Amy Battistiache, and I'm joined in the studio today by oh so many of my co-hosts. My goodness, we have Jasmine.
Hi.
We have Mary.
Hello.
We have Froilán.
Hola a todos.
Y pues claro, tenemos a mí, we have me, and we have a whole long line of guests sitting on the other side of us over here. We have basically three representatives from the Boston Liberation Health Group, Lisa Thompson, who is a dentist, and Alberto Flores and Don Belki Martinez, who are social workers, and they're going to be talking with us today about what Liberation Health is and what role it's playing today in Boston. And if we have time, I think we're also doing an Amnesty Minute, and we have some news coming up, and of course, good tunes, so stick around.
But first, we'd like to remind you that the views and opinions expressed on this show don't necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of WMBR, the Technology Broadcasting Corporation, or MIT.
Also, you're welcome to call us during the show at 617-253-8810, or email us in English, Spanish, Portuguese, or even French. Or Korean. Yeah, at sferio@wmbr.org. And you can catch this and all of our previous shows on the web, too, on the archive section on www.wmbr.org, or at our own website, which is webmit.edu/hemisphere.
Okay. Dale, dale.
Vamos, ahora.
Vamos.
Bueno, comenzamos con las noticias. Let's start with some news. Since we have a lot of stuff to talk about, I'm only presenting like two pieces. So in Connecticut, same-sex couples have exchanged vows for the first time since the state Supreme Court okayed gay marriage last month. Connecticut and Massachusetts are now the only states allowing gay marriage after California voters voted to ban it earlier this month. Gay rights activists plan on holding nationwide demonstrations this weekend in nearly 200 U.S. cities and towns against the California measure. En español, en Connecticut, parejas del mismo sexo contrajeron matrimonio por primera vez desde que la Suprema Corte del Estado aprobó el matrimonio entre homosexuales el mes pasado. Connecticut y Massachusetts son ahora los únicos estados que permiten el matrimonio entre homosexuales, luego de que los ciudadanos de California votaron para prohibirlo a principios de este mes. Los activistas a favor de los derechos de los homosexuales planean realizar manifestaciones en todo el país este fin de semana, en casi 200 ciudades y pueblos de los Estados Unidos, para protestar contra la medida que fue pasada en California. Y noticias de un poquito lejos. The United Nations says it's been forced to halt food aid to 750,000 Palestinians because of the Israeli blockade of the Gaza Strip. Israel says it won't allow food shipments into Gaza because Palestinian militants continue to fire rockets at nearby Israeli towns. The rocket fire began last week after an Israeli missile attack killed 6 people. Meanwhile, the Israeli government has also forced Gaza Main's power plant to shut down after cutting off its fuel supplies. The plant provides between a quarter to a third of Gaza's electricity. In addition to the food and fuel blockades, Israel has also barred foreign journalists from Gaza. En español, esta última noticia, la Organización de las Naciones Unidas dice que se vio obligada a suspender la ayuda alimentaria que brinda 750,000 palestinos debido al bloqueo israelí de la franja de Gaza. Israel dice que no permitirá que los alimentos ingresen a Gaza porque los militantes palestinos siguen llevando a cabo ataques con cohetes en localidades israelíes cercanas. Estos ataques comenzaron la semana pasada luego de que Israel disparó un misil que causó la muerte de 6 personas. Mientras tanto, el gobierno israelí también provocó que la principal planta energética de Gaza cerrara al cortar el suministro del combustible. Esta planta genera entre una tercera y una cuarta parte de la electricidad en Gaza. Además del bloqueo de alimentos y combustible, Israel prohibió el ingreso de los periodistas extranjeros a Gaza. Those are, you know, some of the news of this week.
Gracias, gracias, Froilán. And you can hear our bilingual news at the beginning of every Sferio show. And we sort of expand it to include anything that is particularly significant to those of us here at Sferio. And if you realize that the Western Hemisphere's reach into the rest of the world is often much longer than perhaps it might even need to be, there's your explanation for why we feel it's important to do things like talk about the Gaza Strip and so on our largely Western Hemisphere-focused show. So we'd like to introduce the Boston Liberation Health Group. And at least the members of the Boston Liberation Health Group that we have here with us today. How are you guys?
Doing well, thank you.
Fine.
Hopefully all these microphones are good and working. All right. I think we almost have a microphone shortage. We have so many people here today, so you might hear our microphones squeaking around a little bit. maybe we could just start with a real quick synopsis of what we're talking about when we talk about what liberation health is. I know that, you know, we have listeners from all over the world and people who are involved in different movements, social activist movements and so on. And then we have people who really are just kind of listening to our show because they really don't know anything about these things and they're kind of, you know, starting to get a sense of it. So some listeners will say, oh, liberation, right, that must be like liberation theology, or, you know, they might get a connection. But maybe it's worth stepping back and sort of explaining a little bit. Dawn wants to pick that up, I can tell.
Thanks, Amy. Well, liberation health is a particular philosophy or conceptual framework that summarizes a different approach to healthcare. And basically, with liberation health, the idea is that people's personal problems are directly related to the institutions that they interact with and the cultural norms and values that they live under. And our sort of goal as liberation health practitioners is to sort of help people make the connections between their personal problems and these larger issues, and then ultimately help them to take action.
Uh-huh. So can you give us sort of an introductory example of what that might be? When you talk about cultural norms, are we talking about, I don't know, racism comes to mind. Is that something that you would address?
Certainly. When we're talking with people, we try to speak with them about what are the personal factors that are influencing their problems, what are the cultural norms and values that influence their problems, and racism would certainly be one of them, and what are the institutional barriers that influence their problem. Mm-hmm. And we sort of analyze all of that with our the people we're working with, our coworkers, our clients, our patients together.
Wow.
How do you work with them? Like, what do you mean when you are working with them? Do you push for certain policy? I know you told me earlier about the rally that you guys have planned out. What are, like, practical, I guess, activities that you guys actually do to promote what you believe? Everyone's so shy.
This may be the first time we've had so many people in the room, and we've been there's just been like a general nervousness about radio. Es un poco complicado, verdad, tener que hablar así de estas cuestiones por radio, pero es una conversación que estamos teniendo aquí con la gente y es todo bien tranquilito eso, ¿verdad? Todo tranquilito.
Well, maybe we do lots of different things. I mean, all of us are different kinds of healthcare workers. You know, Lisa's a dentist, Alberto and I are social workers. So for us, as social workers, we meet with people that have different kinds of mental health issues, problems in living, as we like to call it. Mm-hmm. And when we are meeting with people, we sort of help them. Well, they help us to understand their problem. And then from there, we talk with them and we analyze the problem. We talk about the personal factors that contribute to the problem, the cultural norms and values, things like individualism, competition, things like that. And then we talk about what are the institutions that are interfacing with them and how are those institutions helping or hurting the problem. And then through those conversations, we decide on a course of action that we take. So basically, in terms of the work, we're not just trying to help people adjust to an unjust society. We're also working with them to try to challenge those institutions and challenge the cultural norms to change not only their own personal problems, but their societies that they live in.
So that makes sense from what I at least am aware of with in terms of liberation theology and how Paulo Freire then took that and applied it to literacy and kind of bringing people into higher levels of formal education. saying it's not just enough for the people in power to come and say, here's some information for you, and this sort of banking model that I can see how really the banking model being, you know, a person is like a bank. You put information into them, and then you come along and you take information out. That sounds very much like the sort of traditional Western medical model. So you're really getting away from that then by doing this approach.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yeah, I think, excuse me, I think a lot of times, you know, patients come to us, or clients come to us, at least in my experience, you know, seeing me as a sort of expert, sort of, all right, I have a problem, I need you to help me with it, I need to fix it. And what we try to do is, what I try to do in my work is, you know, understand what's going on, what are the barriers, what the possibilities are for a different view, you know, instead of the dominant worldview, try to look at it from a different perspective and make sure to let them know, you know, I'm not an expert, you know, they're the expert of their own lives, mm-hmm. you know, and I'm certainly not one to, you know, to say, well, I know what's wrong with you and this is what you have to do to change.
And I think that is a way that we look at people as subjects instead of objects, that they're not people that we tell them what to do or what they need to do, but that they can, you know, figure out, you know, what they need to do for themselves and then steps or actions towards changing that potentially in their situation.
Could you give us an example of, like, I guess, a single case that you had to deal with? And I think that'll just, like, help me understand better what the methodology of liberation movement or liberation health is.
We know it's challenging to talk about private issues of people who are coming to you in confidence. So maybe you can make up sort of a theoretical client that you might have.
Well, I guess I could speak in general terms. I work with a lot of adolescents, and a lot of the problems they present with are issues around, you know, school issues. You know, the school saying, well, he's got a problem with hyperactivity. He's very impulsive. He is defiant. He's oppositional. And I try to work with them and understand what is going on in their lives, you know. I don't try to look at them as, you know, somebody, you know, as a problem child, you know. And I try to look at, you know, and I don't try to look at them with a diagnosis in mind, you know, like oppositionally defiant or somebody or an adolescent with ADHD. You know, I just try to look at them as, you know, so-and-so. So what's going on in your life? What's, you know, what are the barriers that are impeding your, you know, your development, your academic work, your relationships, you know, and what can we do? What sort of exploration can we do together, you know, to get to a point where, you know, these so-called problems, you know, are not there, I guess.
I mean, I think that one of the main differences between the liberation health model and traditional healthcare is that so much of it is about getting people to adapt. Uh-huh. You know, if you've got depression, how do you adapt to your situation?
Society's not going to change, so you need to fit in, you square peg, fit into the round hole, right?
Exactly. And, you know, or if you're, you know, aggressive, how can you have a control your temper and so on and so forth. And not that people don't need to adapt. We understand people live in this world. They need to adapt. But what also needs to change is that society needs to change. We need to combat racism. We need to combat an economy that is not paying people a living wage. We need to have health care for everybody. And those things, if they begin to change, people's personal problems will change too.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like you'll have to have an interface between traditional healthcare and the liberation health ideas that you guys have. Like, how does it conflict, and how do you, I guess, like, fight that?
I know, as my experience as a dentist, a lot of the work or the theory, the liberation health theory that I use, isn't really in the dental practice. You know, it is a pretty the healthcare system is a pretty rigid system, and I tend to use these ideas in conversations that I have with coworkers about maybe working situations or relationships with themselves or friends, coworkers, or friends that I have, you know, combating homophobia in this society. And it tends to be a much more like individual conversation that I have with people and how we, you know, can live in this world. And
It seems to me that just from my my own experiences, people who know me outside of Sferio know that I'm studying to become a nurse practitioner. But before that, I was working as an interpreter in hospitals in the Boston area. And one of the things that I saw a lot, which I'm sure was not even really intentional, was this sort of blaming the victim type of thing coming from the viewpoint, you know, coming from the healthcare providers, right? Like, oh, these moms, they don't take care of their kids' teeth, that, you know, these children just come in and they have no teeth left and we have to pull them all. And, you know, there would be these attitudes. And I think that maybe if I'm understanding what you're saying, that might be a place where this approach is especially useful, right? In turning to your colleagues and saying, well, there are different models, there are different ways we can conceive of what is going on, and we have to look at it in a, you know, through a different lens.
Exactly. And not only our colleagues, but our actual clients, because people have internalized these dominant worldview values and they blame themselves. Mm. So that you might have mothers who are working two jobs, are not fluent in English, they're single moms, they have two kids, they have to depend on public transportation, and they arrive late to appointments all the time. And usually they will sort of blame themselves, like they're not organized and, you know, they need to develop their, you know, management skills better. But really, when you don't have a system that allows for good public transportation and a living wage, so the mother only has to work one job, and solidarity and community, it's no wonder that it's a surprise that they don't arrive late. And when you have those kind of conversations with people, they really feel liberated and they stop blaming themselves.
Estamos aquí en Sferio, estamos hablando con un grupito representando el Grupo de Salud y Liberación de Boston. Tenemos aquí a Lisa Thompson, quien es una dentista. Tenemos a Alberto Flores también y a Don Belkin Martínez, quienes son trabajadores sociales acá también en Boston, ¿verdad?
Sí.
Y se me olvidó mencionar el número de teléfono. Si quieren llamar, si tienen preguntas, si quieren hablar con nosotros, el número de teléfono nuestro es 617-253-8810.
Español, portugués.
Y en portugués también se puede hablarnos, y hasta en coreano parece. So maybe this is the moment where we take a little musical break and give you some other food for thought in a musical vein. This is a cut that, get this, you guys, has not been played on Sferio before. And it is by a band that is very dear to my heart, and I'm sure they will become dear to your heart too if you have not heard them. They are the Latino Jewish Brooklyn band. The Hip Hop Judios. And they sing in English and rap in Spanish, and I don't know if they do Yiddish, but they definitely include some Hebrew. Anyway, they're amazing.
Nice.
And this political song. Yeah, in all kinds of songs, yes.
Oh, okay.
This song that we're going to hear is called Viva Guantanamera. And you might recognize that it actually isn't so much about Guantanamera as it is about Guantanamo. And it sounds something like this, I believe, here. Want to say who we are for us?
Somos Sferio en WMBR. Háblenos, por favor, mándenos un correo. Todo eso. Estamos escuchando aquí a estos compas. Mándenos un recado.
Well, this is one of those technical difficulty moments, isn't it? All right, hang on, and we will try this one more time. All right. Well, we will come back to that fabulous song that I've given such a great introduction for in a little bit.
We'll just go back to talking to these awesome people that we have in the studio.
Sounds like a good plan.
Okay.
I actually had a question for you guys. I was looking at your website, the website of the Liberation Health Group, and I saw something where you said that you identify with the oppressed, dominated, and marginalized of the world and their struggles, and then that you especially try to liberate people from the current productive processes that put capital and profits before human needs. And so I wondered if you could give examples of people that you've interacted with where you've seen this, where they're like things like where they're the minimum wage isn't really high enough, and you feel that capital and profits are too emphasized in society.
Well, I could probably speak a little bit about, again, just in my experience working with adolescents, you know, the emphasis on, you know, getting the best gear, you know, the best sneakers, the best clothing, you know, the best cell phones, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, talking with them about, you know, where does the clothing come from? You know, the talking about raising awareness about sweatshops, you know, and this, where does this idea that you have to look a certain way, you have to be a certain way to be somebody in society, you know, and just talking with them about issues like that is one small way that I work with my clients.
So do these clients come to you, like they find you and they try to talk to you, or like do you approach them through some kind of program?
No, I mean, I guess that's partly, you know, the model that we're in, that we work in. We work in a medical model, so a lot of these people come to us from, at least in my part, they're being referred by their doctors or by their schools.
Oh, okay.
And for me, I work at a hospital, and so I am a family therapist. So people are being referred to me in the Department of Psychiatry because there's problems in their family, usually some sort of mental health problem.
Do you ever face challenges? So, like, I guess there are different methodologies to fight, I guess, injustice in the healthcare system and some misunderstandings of it. And liberation health methodology could be the solution to all the problems there is. But I'm sure there are some challenges that you guys face as you treat with these patients, that that this methodology isn't, like, the only way to work things out. Like, do you guys ever have challenges? And if you do, how do you approach that problem? Come on.
Well, I mean, I think you kind of answered, you have a pretty good sense of your question, because it's not the dominant way of thinking. The dominant way of thinking in healthcare is the medical model, that people have problems, you need to fix their problems. You know, if people have depression, they need to adapt to the system. If people have anxiety, they need to develop a coping plan. You know, most mental health people are not out, you know, going to rallies and demonstrations with their clients to try to change the system. So we believe that's a critical component of our work. And I think that it's probably fair to say that there's not a whole lot of people in healthcare that think that, at least in this country.
Yeah, I definitely agree with what you're saying. You know, it seems, of course, you know, I haven't been to the doctor that many times here in the U.S., but the times I have been is just, you know, okay, what's your problem? That's the first question, you know, what's your problem? I feel like, you know, I just feel bad. No, you know, what is it? So they I don't know. Even I felt like a little bit, I really don't know, you know, I just want to feel better or... So it just, like, even just the system of how they approach with the questions and all of that, you know, I don't know, they don't make people feel better immediately, you know, just by people, how they approach people, I don't, you know.
I feel like it's also something about building trust between patients and the medical provider that, like, for example, for your case, patients can come to you and tell you the challenges or the problems that they are having. But if they don't trust what you say and, like, they don't listen to your feedback, it's not going to make any difference, right? So I guess my other question would be, how do you communicate so that these patients can actually trust what you say? Because it's like a completely different methodology. So how do you make sure that that you can communicate through them and that it's going to work?
Maybe in the traditional Western health terminology would say, how do you establish rapport?
I mean, I think it's just, it's something that just develops. I'm very upfront with them now, especially with adolescents, that, you know, you're probably not going to trust me because I'm probably just another adult that you think, you see me as another adult that's going to tell you you're doing this wrong, you're doing that wrong. And I tell them that, you know, I mean, like, I understand that. So if you can tell me right now, or you don't have to tell me that you trust me or not, but I'm hoping that I could gain your trust through the time that we work with. You know, it's not something that happens in an hour, you know, and it's not something that happens in a month sometimes. It's just, it develops naturally.
Mm-hmm. I think it also develops by actually listening to what the client or the patient or the person is saying. You know, instead of in a medical model, a lot of times you hear what the patient is saying, and then you have to kind of interpret or change their words to fit a diagnosis or to fit, you know, what something is, instead of, you know, listening and working and maybe trying something and maybe that fails and then you try again. Or I know in dentistry and with patients or people that I see, you know, I ask them, you know, when was the last time you went to the dentist? And a lot of times it's like 5 years ago. And I say, yeah, you know, what stopped you from coming or why weren't you able to come? And understanding that dentistry is not affordable and healthcare is not affordable. And it's not oftentimes that people don't want to come, it's that they can't or there are certain barriers. And so I think understanding those barriers and not judging that person also helps gain trust.
I wanted to ask a little bit more about like what you said with the kind of the community aspect. Like, I thought it was really interesting the point you brought out about, like, healthcare providers are never, they're always just trying to change the way people are coping but not actually go to the root of the actual problems in society. And so I wondered, your website mentioned that some of the people in your group are community organizers, and I wondered if you could talk a little bit about that aspect.
I mean, I think the way that we sort of see a community organizer is that we're all community organizers. We're all trying to fight against racism. We're trying to fight against sexism, homophobia. We believe the market economy is not the best way to deliver health care. And so we have those kind of conversations with our clients and act with them to change that.
Mm. All right, we're going to try again with the music. And when we come back with this little musical interlude, we'll continue. We're talking with some representatives from the Boston Liberation Health Group. How many people actually are in the group? Do you have a count at this point?
There's 200 people on our email list, but I would say, you know, our monthly meetings are attended by between 10 and 15 people.
All right. So we'll talk a little bit more about that when we come back after this message from Los Hip Hop Judíos. Well, today is just not going to be the day. Today is not going to be the day when we're going to hear that fabulous song. I guess people are... This
not
is actually...
Today.
It's all part of my plan to keep people listening every week to Sferio so that they'll come back and listen to the song. No, I'm just kidding.
I'm really looking forward to this song. I think I'm going to listen to it afterwards. After the show, I'm going to stay and listen to it.
Ay, que pena me da.
Yeah. So I guess we'll go back to questioning you guys again. Sorry. They are standing on the other side of the station, and they look pretty tired because we've been bombarding them with all these questions.
We're grilling
but
them.
Because your group is so awesome, you know.
Bring it.
Okay. All right. So... It's the new administration now, right? Everyone's so excited that Obama is the president, and people are just so looking forward to having him and seeing all these changes that'll happen. And from the perspective of the Boston Liberation Group, like, what are the things that you guys are looking forward to from Obama or from the new administration?
I think, for one, immigration reform. I think that's a big one for me, and probably for the group. And obviously, you know, healthcare reform. Those two issues, you know, are huge.
Yeah, I mean, I think we'd like to see single payer healthcare in the next 4 years.
Yes.
and in the special subdivision of dentistry liberation health.
Yeah, I mean, ideally, dentistry should be considered, you know, part of your health, so it shouldn't be separated.
Yes,
same
exactly.
With eye care.
So what are the long-term goals that you guys have for your group? Oh, before that, I wanted to mention something. So I was also looking at their website, and one thing that's really cool about their meeting is that they do potluck dinner with assignments that last names from A to G can bring desserts and drinks, and H to N bring a main course, and O to Z bring salads and appetizers. Is it still going on, or is it like something that happened way before?
No, we have a potluck every month, and
cool.
Actually, this month, it's next Sunday, the 23rd, at noon.
Okay. That's so awesome. Like, there's food.
Do you have a concentration of desserts or something, you know? What are the last names in the group?
Well, you know what? I tell the truth, I don't think we've actually kept track of that. I think now everybody just brings whatever.
Okay.
I usually bring the beer, so...
A lot of
that's
people
do. That's the main course, I guess.
Definitely the main course.
Yeah, what would you do if everybody's last name began with like a, you know, a Z or an M or something? <on? laughs> All right. What do you think? Should we try one more time with the music? People are going to like laugh at me at this point if it doesn't work.
It's okay. They can call us and laugh at us live. That's cool.
Yes, we'll see. What number would they call, Froy?
617? Oh, I'm sorry. I'm not Froy. I was being Froy. Okay, it's
617-253-8188. Coming at you otra vez in tu face,
asking what is this place,
a black hole by the bay, donde tus derechos
slip away.
And so we gotta say,
who
is the enemy combatant? Imanime baja Manhattan, hurling verbal pickles on pillows of satin.
I'm not a garbage man, but we pick up the trash. They call me Speedy J, cause I win the 100-meter dash. Clap my hands when I feel alright, but I turned around, where's the Bill of Rights? What can Chris say from a withered root? You'll try to entender, but it don't compute.
What are the fruits of orange jumpsuits? And if old habeas corpus gets a boot, it's the same as those motley asking who's to blame, cause the camino a justicia sure ain't paved with shame.
Mr. President, is this really us? Home of the brave in the land of the unjust. We the people, you the government, we can't trust. So I strangled the microphone and kicked dust. Now you label us by another name, an attempt to indefinitely detain. With no trial at all, your little war game. It's un-American not to let us clear name. The Bill of Rights, man, you don't, but you did. The founding fathers turning over in their grave sick. I'm just an ordinary man with a plan to unify an uprise fist in the sky. Needle in the eye of the Patriot Act. Now my bank on my home, now we're safe from that. Habeas corpus, where you at? We need life, liberty, and justice back.
Banner to tar-spangled manor under the influence of Pentagon planners. Lead by example, not stampede and stample. Give me facts, not statistical samples. Home of the free, land of the slaves. Secret prisons need more Abu Ghraibs. It's the sound of chupacabras. No más palabras. Enciendo candelabras. Like Hector Lavoe, yo canto.
de un paraíso de lusura tan pura y endura, hasta que los cosmos hagan su final cha-cha. Iluminado y ubicado en un rincón de mi corazón, donde los moradores son el ritmo y la esperanza.
Hi, so now you're back to, now you're back to WMBR Stereo. You're here with us as we talk about Boston Liberation Health Group. And during the break, we had this wonderful idea that to give you a better perspective on what Liberation Health methodology is, Freud is going to pretend that he's a depressed child because his parents got divorced. And Alberto here, or, I don't know, one of these three people will be, I guess, the counselor who will show how the Liberation Health methodology works. So this is going to be really exciting. Freud, do you want to go ahead and introduce yourself as a depressed person?
So, well, you know, they send me, you know.
Well, I guess first thing is, what brings you here?
Me? You know, I did not want to come, of course. You know, they made me do it, you know, the teachers. Because I'm a good student. I think I don't really like school anymore that much. I'm sad. Well, not sad. Not sad. You know, of course not sad. But I don't know.
Do you like anything about school?
Maybe break, lunch. You know.
Lunch is good.
Yeah.
I like lunch.
If it's free, better, yes.
What are your teachers saying? You said your teachers want you to come here.
Yeah, just because, you know, I fall asleep in the class. I cannot pay attention, really. I don't know if it's, you know, I think I'm just tired. They say, you know, they just don't talk to me. They just send me to the office. They say, you know, you're going to be sleeping here. You cannot be sleeping here. So that's some stuff.
That sounds really tough. I mean, how are where do you live, compañero?
Well, I live close to the school,
uh-huh.
Like one of those in a neighborhood close by.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's how can I describe it? It's a neighborhood.
Yeah.
It's a regular neighborhood, I think.
And do you live with your, who lives in the house with you?
Everyone, you know, my brothers, my sisters, my mom.
Mm-hmm. So is it your mom and you have a bunch of brothers?
Yes.
And
yes,
sisters?
Yeah.
And how is that going? I mean, is that you all feeling like things are okay, or?
I guess my little sisters, they don't care, you know, they're little. My brother, he kind of, like, he's upset a little bit. I think we try not to talk about any, you know, that, you know, bad stuff or ugly stuff. Just whatever.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but how old are your brothers and sisters?
10 and 8. My sisters. And my brother, he's kind of almost my age. So, you know, my sister are young, my brother, he's not too young. He's just like me.
So if we were doing a Liberation Health interview, one of the things that we would probably ask about is, you know, how much support does your mom have? I mean, and, you know, just we would ask more about if there was a lot of family and community around to help her, to give her support, to give you support. We'd ask about sort of economic things, if there was enough, you know, support economically and things like that. We'd ask about the housing stuff. I mean, it's kind of hard to do all that in just a short little time. But those were the things we would ask about, too.
I think you guys, you know, we were able to get a little flavor for what it might be like. As Freud, as your, as the receiver or the participant, I wouldn't say receiver, huh? I don't know what term you guys would use, but as the client in this case, how did it feel to you?
I don't know. Maybe, you know, if I was in that situation, just talking, it will make me feel, you know, a little bit lighter, I think. So even you know, even if my parents are not getting a divorce right now, it even felt a little bit better right now.
I think what I noticed was that he wasn't being treated differently. Like, he wasn't being treated as someone with depression, but he was just being asked some questions about his family, just like how you'd have, like, a normal conversation with someone that you've never had a conversation with before. It's just asking, oh, you know, who's in your family? Where do you live? Blah, blah, blah. And maybe eventually, as you build on the trust relationship, you'll delve into I guess his problems or his challenges. But it was really interesting to see that the way you treat Freud or any patient isn't as if, like, they are sick, mentally sick or physically sick, whatever. It's just that they are just like you. It's just another human being. And that was pretty cool.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, sorry. I liked how it was, like, very, like, it seemed personal. Like, you weren't, like, really distant. You were, like, you asked him specifically about his family, and I don't know. I liked that.
Mm-hmm. I think we'll have to send this version of the show in to the Audies for the Radio Theater Awards, and we'll nominate Freud.
Yes! That's my dream!
You did a good job. Yeah.
You know, doing this little very truncated version of this, though, did make me wonder what kind of length of time is ideal for you when working together with people. Obviously, a few minutes is not going to suffice. Do you find that you end up, especially the social workers among you, do you find out that you work more with people, longer with people, than you might if you weren't using this approach?
I mean, I think more than anything else, it's an attitude that you have with people. It's the way that you conduct yourself with people. And really, you know, there might be situations where you only would meet with someone once in a hospital or in, you know, one time in a, you know, for a dental visit. But it's really the attitude that you have with people, that you're not an expert, that you're just like them, and that everybody has problems in living, you're no different, and that you're in solidarity with them to sort of, you know, help figure out a way to live the life that they want to lead and change the world so they can do that.
Have you had cases, you know, when people say, you know, I don't feel well, and so you're not an expert, why should I be talking to you, you know? So maybe some, like, confrontational people. How do you deal maybe with people who said, no, you know, I don't know why I'm here, you know?
You just acknowledge it, you know. You acknowledge that they probably don't want to be there with you, and you just try to have a conversation around, well, what can we do together to try and figure out, you know, what's going on here.
Yeah, I think what Alberto was saying is also just resonates with this idea that we live in this society in the United States that has a culture of individualism, you know, that we need to figure our problems out on our own, Or somebody has to fix them, or you go to the therapist to, you know, to fix the problem so that you can get better. And this idea that we can work together and talk maybe together, and that you know, one person isn't just the expert and the other one is the one experiencing it, that maybe we can experience it together or understand each other better to help each other, and that, you know, we're not constantly the teachers and other people are the students or the learners, but that we can learn from each other and kind of work together to change things.
And I think the one of the big things is just trying to reflect on, you know, on what's going on. Like, all right, maybe there is a problem for somebody, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's a problem for you, you know, and just acknowledge that.
Okay. So thanks so much for being here with us today. And if there are any last minute comments or, I don't know, something that you'd like the listeners to know, this is time for you.
I mean, I guess the only thing we'd like to say is that our group is open to anyone that's concerned about healthcare. You don't have to be a healthcare worker, and that we welcome all people that want to be in solidarity with other people in Boston and to work to change the way healthcare is delivered and the society that we live in.
Mm. Well, you know what? This means we have time for some more music. And now that we've got the music set up,
hopefully,
I think we can. Hopefully, we got it down. We can do it. Okay, this is Lalo Rodriguez. This is a piece called "Si No Hay Material," and it comes way back from the early '80s, a salsa song talking about the importance of preparing your mind and getting out there and giving everything your all and. Not enough of my blather, just to put the music on, Amy. Okay.
Si tienes inteligencia, poco no te faltará. Si tienes...
Estamos de regreso aquí con Esferio y con otros compañeros de la, el Boston Liberation Health Group. Y pues vamos a... Ya merito nos vamos. Vamos a dejar un ratito para que ellos conversen lo último que quieran conversar con nosotros. Y también para tener announcements. We are having announcements. And we're just finishing up what, you know, the conversation with these compañeros here.
Vamos a preguntar un poquito en español, ¿cierto? Porque no hemos casi hablado con ustedes en español. Este, si podrían darnos una idea de, bueno, un poquito de lo que hemos hablado, obviamente no vamos a repetir todo, pero este, un resumen quizás.
Bueno, nosotros somos un grupo de trabajadores sociales, trabajadores de salud, activistas, organizadores de comunidad, que trabajamos para, bueno, trabajar con la comunidad.
Y nuestro grupo está disponible para todos y no tienes que ser trabajadora social, dentista, doctor para ser parte de nuestro grupo. Y queremos invitar a ustedes para, you know, mirar nuestro website. Y
¿cuál es el website?
El www.liberationhealth.org.
Bien, bien.
Okay, thanks for being here today with us. And now we're going to move on to our Amnesty Minute, which hasn't been happening for the last 2 weeks because I haven't been here, but now it's back. I just wanted to, I guess, briefly mention about the Congo crisis, which is, I think, forgotten, or it's not having the attention that it needs. But I'm just going to talk to you guys about what's going on in Congo and what actions should be done. Fightings continue on several fronts in North Kivu in the Democratic Republic of Congo, despite a unilateral ceasefire declared by the armed group, the National Congress for the Defense of the People, on October 29th. More than 250,000 people have so far fled the ongoing violence, bringing the total number of displaced people in the province to at least 1.2 million and possibly higher. Most are now living in displaced camps in the narrow belt of land that is still under government control around Goma. Amnesty International's researcher on Democratic Republic of Congo, Andrew Phillips, said, "A human rights and humanitarian tragedy is underway in North Kivu province, but the UN Security Council, the European Union, and African Union are sitting on their hands. They have so far failed to give the UN peacekeeping force the reinforcements and equipment it needs to provide effective protection to civilians. Conditions in the camps are said to be disastrous. New camps, many without latrines, or latrines, I say that wrong. Many without latrines, portable water, and shelters are still springing up. Some camps are within a few hundred meters of the front lines. Dozens of cases of cholera have begun to be reported. Humanitarian agencies are doing their utmost to bring aid to these displaced, but are close to being overwhelmed by the scale of the suffering. In the larger part of the province, in areas under armed group control or otherwise inaccessible to humanitarian aid, tens of thousands of displaced are unaccounted for and living without any organized assistance. The human rights situation is no less deadly. On the night of 5th and 6th November, after fierce fighting between the Congress for the Defense People Armed Group and pro-government Mai Mai Militia for control of the town Kiwanja, Congress for the Defense of People fighters reportedly went from house to house searching for Mai Mai members they believed were hiding inside. Witnesses told Amnesty International that large numbers of men, residents of Kiwanja, who were mainly aged between 18 and 30, who were young fathers and newlyweds, were taken from their homes and deliberately killed by the Congress of National Democratic of People. I think I'm running out of time, so I'm just gonna go to the bottom of what I want to say, which is that Amnesty International is urging the international community and you to make no more excuses, to reinforce the United Nations peacekeeping force right now, to create safe corridors for humanitarian aid throughout North Kivu in Democratic Congo, and put concerted international pressure on the fighting forces to halt all human rights abuses. And you could do this by, I guess first you have to learn about the issue, and what you could do is Google it or go to Amnesty website and learn what's going on and pressure the United Nations and UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon and also our new president, Barack Obama, to take action on this. So for more information, visit amnestyusa.org. And now I'm going to turn the mic over to Mary Masterman.
Hello there. I'd just like to say first that you're listening to WMBR Cambridge and the Sferio program. And Jasmine's just been talking to us about the crisis that's happening right now in the Congo, and I think it's really important that everyone learn about this, because I feel like it's not being publicized at all, and it's horrible, and it's, I mean, it's like, it might be as bad as the genocide in Rwanda was, but there's not any publicity about it. And now I have some announcements for you, and so our first announcement is that the Brazilian Immigrant Center will be having a two-day seminar on how to become a candidate for a political election this weekend, November 15th through 16th, at the University of Massachusetts, 100 Morrissey Road. The first session, entitled How to Organize a Campaign to Win, will be held at 10 a.m.